Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Native language revitalization is something that's important to Native nations across the country. But learning a language can be hard work. It involves time and devotion, it requires finding Native speakers to practice with, and not everyone is ready to start learning. Do you ever feel guilty for not speaking your language? You think a good dose of guilt can revive our indigenous languages? Join us for an encore presentation of Native America Calling right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Veterans of World War II were recently honored at a luncheon in Rapid City, South Dakota, prior to Memorial Day commemorations. As Jim Kent reports, the gathering brought more than 100 members of the Greatest Generation together to share stories and food.
70 years after the end of World War II, the men and women who took part in those hostilities are leaving us at a rate of 1,000 every day. Air Force veteran Bill Casper decided to let those remaining from what's been called the Greatest Generation know that their sacrifices are still appreciated. Casper's uncle served with the 101st Airborne Division. He landed at Normandy on June 6, 1944, and was killed during the Battle of the Bulge.
It's a way for me to honor my uncle who died in the Battle of the Bulge, and also all the rest of the World War II veterans. In South Dakota has about 3,000 veterans left. They're passing at the rate of about 3 or 4 a day. You know, they're not going to be around that long, and I think everything we can do to honor them, we need to do.
Native Americans served in World War II at a higher rate than any other ethnic group. Lakota Elder, former U.S. Army nurse, and Normandy invasion veteran Marcella LeBeau was among them. LeBeau says that 70 years later, there are still some things she can't forget about the war.
A soldier that came in, he was a prisoner of war, and I can remember his look, his skin stretched over his bones, and that vacant stare, and it was such an impact on me, I can't remove that from my memory.
Marcella LeBeau considered it an honor to take care of those soldiers wounded in battle. She also considered it an honor to be able to attend the luncheon at age 95. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Miss Chamai 2015 has big plans for her new role. As KYUK intern Ellie Coggins reports, the title holder plans to travel to different Alaska communities to address suicide prevention.
Mary Kernack says it was an emotional experience to be crowned Miss Chamai at this year's festival.
I was startled a little. I was excited. I felt my whole body get really warm, and like I felt like my heart dropped to my stomach, and I was excited. I felt very humbled to be in that position.
Kernack, 19, graduated from Bethel Regional High School last year. Born in Apakiak, she moved to Bethel in 2003. She also represented Holy Cross, an Athabascan community, and her mother's hometown. Kernack considered running for Miss Chamai for about a year. Thanks to constant encouragement from friends and family, she finally entered. During the competition, Kernack and other contestants served dinner for elders, sat for an interview, participated in a photo shoot, and were judged based on their interactions throughout the festival. Their individual platforms were the backbones of their campaigns. Kernack ran on a platform of suicide awareness and prevention, which she sees as a critical issue.
And it's a very sensitive subject, but it's a very powerful one in our Delta. So I believe that we should raise awareness, and what better way to do it than coming together as a community within our youth.
She has plenty of plans for the future. Kernack's next steps may take her to the sky.
First of all, attend college and finish it. Eventually, I want to get a commercial pilot's license and serve the people of our Delta.
Right now, she's preparing for the Miss World Eskimo Indian Olympics, or Miss WIO competition. That will take place this summer in Fairbanks. In Bethel, I'm Ellie Coggins.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Today is an encore presentation of our electronic talking circle. Phone lines are closed, but we still want to hear from you. Send an email to comments at NativeAmericaCalling.com. This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. In the Navajo Nation, a long overdue presidential election is taking place. And you may have heard the story. Navajo presidential contender Chris Deschini was disqualified from the race because he didn't speak Navajo fluently. That disqualification and the subsequent protests, lawsuits, and backroom squabbles pushed the election back from November to now. At the heart of the issue with Deschini is the Navajo law that states candidates must speak the language fluently. And that got us thinking about everyone who doesn't speak their native language fluently. Here's something that perhaps some of you have heard at some point or another in your life. If you don't speak your native language, you're not really native. How useful is this idea? And do you ever feel guilty for not speaking your native tongue? And does this kind of guilt trip pull us closer to our languages, or does it push it away? That's our topic today. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And joining us now from the Oneida Nation in Wisconsin is Jerry Hill, and he is the president of the board of directors for the Indigenous Language Institute, and he is a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Jerry, and please feel free to introduce yourself further.
I said my name is Jerry Hill. I'm happy to be here and address everybody, and I said my Indian name also.
Thank you, Jerry. Jerry, how does it feel being able to do that?
It feels good. There was a time I couldn't, and there was a time I was kind of bashful about it, but, you know, I feel good that I can do it, and I try to encourage other Oneidas to use as much as they can, as often as they can.
Thanks, Jerry. And let's go back to that time when you were learning your language. You grew up in a house where Oneida was spoken, but you didn't really start speaking Oneida until after you graduated from law school. Please tell us about the emotions you felt connected to speaking your language.
Well, I think, you know, looking at it now, you know, I feel good that I know what I know, and I feel like I really don't know enough. And I feel like when I started, it was something that just kind of clicked in me that said, no more waiting, no more talking about one of these days, no more procrastinating with good words that delayed action, and I just started. And I was fortunate to have a mentor for over 10 years that we met on a daily basis, and he helped me unbelievably a lot. And I think as an older person learning the language, it was, I won't say it was hard. I would say there's a lot to learn. And the sooner you get started, the better.
Thanks, Jerry. And what would you say about learning your native language? Is it hard? Has it been easy? Or maybe there are other challenges that are there. And do you ever feel guilty for not being able to speak your language? If you do feel that way, what is it that's making you feel guilty? Is it because you can't communicate with others, or is it something to do with identity? Phone lines are closed today, but you can still reach out to us on Twitter and Facebook to share your thoughts. And Jerry, you know, what are some of the emotions, you know, that people do go through when it comes to picking up a language?
Well, I think there's a tremendous amount, the older you are, the tremendous amount of self-critique and self-judgment. It's hard to understand the process of language acquisition unless you try it. And, you know, listening to it once is not going to, you know, help much. You have to really work at it and keep trying. And I think that the emotion of discouragement really kind of has to do with, you know, when we start judging ourselves about, I'm not getting it, I must not be smart enough, things that will really take you off the task. And in that respect, I think it's like, you know, almost anything else that we try that's going to be hard. You got to just, you know, stay focused on what you want, and it will come. So, you know, and you know, as to the guilt part of it, I don't know that I ever felt guilty. I felt ashamed that I didn't know, but I didn't feel guilty. I thought guilt was more like, you know, I did something wrong. And really, I don't think people that don't have the opportunity are doing anything wrong. I think they're just exposed to you know, certain lacks that, you know, existed at one time that exist with less frequency now. And in some places, it's gone. There is no opportunity to hear people speaking and using the language. So I regard, you know, I grew up in the house and I listened and I could hear and I know what it's supposed to sound like, but I didn't really comprehend everything.
All right. Thanks for that, Jerry. And, you know, we're also asking for people's experience, too, when it comes to this. We've thrown out, you know, do you feel guilty, or maybe do you even feel ashamed because you're not able to speak to others in your language? And, Jerry, you know, what is the worst thing when someone feels bad about picking up the language? What's the worst result that happens?
Well, I think the worst result is having too big of expectations. You know, I mean, you really can't expect to have results if you don't put the time in and if you don't have the opportunity. So I think opportunity has a lot to do with it, and having a realistic view of what you're trying to encourage or what you're trying to accomplish. So I guess I just think that you know, that feeling of staying, you know, just staying focused and being disciplined about what you want. And, you know, that gets you through all kinds of things. And also overcoming the idea that, you know, you got to have it all and you got to have it all right away. And there's a magic bullet out there or some system or something that will do it. The only system I'm aware of that works is work. You got to work at it. You got to be around it. You got to, you know, listen. And sometimes if you don't have an opportunity to listen, you know, it really, you know, blunts what you're trying to do. But there's always ways of overcoming that, even in places where they haven't spoken the language for many years and they're learning from recordings or writings or linguistic analysis. They're trying because they want it, and they will get it. I mean, you know, people speak Klingon and that Avatar language, which are made-up languages. And I think the difference between ours and that is that our languages are old, and they've been around.
And a lot of times the languages don't have sounds that we hear in English. And I've heard from folks who are picking up their language that speaking English well means they can't speak their native language well. It's pretty interesting when you start hearing some of the stories when it comes to, you know, difficulties that people have when they are learning the language. I'd also like to hear from our listening audience if you ever decided, all right, time has come. It's time to speak this language, and you jumped on the track to start picking it up. Were you ever met with any negativity, and how did that affect your ability to pick up the language? Phone lines are closed today, but you can still reach out to us on Twitter and Facebook to share your thoughts. And Jerry, what about when you're picking up a language, you know, just even being ready for it? Do you also need to have kind of a tough skin?
Well, I always tell learners, don't be too sensitive. You know, if somebody's trying to correct you, it only means that they think you have enough sense to know the difference between what you're trying to say and a better way of saying it. I think it's an encouragement. And with learners, I always say, don't be paranoid just because somebody corrects you. It means they want you to use the language the right way. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, like your attitude. You know, I've known people who speak English perfectly, but with a heavy accent of another language. And, you know, it doesn't bother. So the emphasis on being able to be an effective speaker and knowing that you'll probably have an American accent, well, it happens all over the place, but it can still, it doesn't have to interfere, and you can keep working on it if you need to or if you want to. I think it's more important to absorb a worldview in your language than it is to belittle yourself because of these new and different sounds. And I love hearing other languages, especially native languages. I don't have to understand everything that's going on, but I love hearing it.
Yes, there is some good stuff out there. And if you'd like to also join the conversation, we want to hear from you. Have you ever decided to pick up your own language? What kind of mindset do you think it takes? Let's hear now from Carol. She is in Oglala, South Dakota, tuned in to KILI. Carol, welcome to the hour.
Yes. Tieni waste nam ya yohila yushkin chante waste yonihan na petchuzapi. I just wanted to comment that, you know, our languages are beautiful and our languages are sacred and there's so much power in it, and to encourage all the young people, you know, to, and as a fluent speaker, that's what I try to do. I have a Hakuja Alex is probably listening today, maybe. Anyway, I have people call me if they want to learn, and we actually have a conversation, you know, beginning, you know, trying to greet and say how they feel and stuff like that. You know, it's important. Our languages are also very emotional, and the English language doesn't have that emotion. When I hear our elders speak our language, it just brings out that emotion, and it's real powerful. And I think that's a lot of the healing that needs to happen with our people, to hear their language so they can be comforted by it. And especially working with babies, it's real important that they sing to the babies in our language. And we're taught that when we first take baby out into the community, we have to sing their name back home so that their spirit doesn't stay anywhere. So knowing that you have a spirit and having that connection, you know, speaking that language and growing up in a fluent family, you know that you have to take care of that spirit throughout your lifetime. So you always call your spirit with you, you know. And so I think that that language, the comfort of it, and that sense of belonging that goes with it is powerful for our young people. And when I sing to the babies, they just smile and they get happy, you know. So I think it's important that they hear their native language, even in the womb. So we even do the honoring of the spirit in the womb ceremony and sing to the baby. So, and then the mom say, oh, the baby's kicking me. So, you know, they're dancing while we're singing.
Carol, thank you for sharing that. Definitely encouraging. Thank you for your call there in Oglala, South Dakota. Let's go ahead now and hear from Will, who is in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI as well. Will, welcome to the hour.
Ha, pilama, nash me tako epi iani washte. Na pepi kile chante washte an na pe chius apilo. Nash me shala kolia tachon kulu tawon spe we chake machiap. Just good morning to everybody. I wanted to comment to that statement about if you don't speak the native language, then you aren't native. I totally disagree with that because it's throwing away our young people who, you know, if they don't speak the language, it's not their fault. We should have taught them that. And we have to remember that historically, our people's languages, collectively, our languages were attacked and taken away through very cruel methods. So to replace that language is going to take a lot of love, nurturing, compassion, and an agreement upon the language speakers to deal with it in a compassionate way. I kind of more subscribe to Black Elk, Hekakasapa's notion that, and I tell my students, if you are born with one drop of Lakota blood, then you are Lakota. We need to accept them as our children and help them through this journey.
All right, Will, thank you for your call there in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Jerry, I'd like you to jump on that one, too. What do you think about that statement?
Repeat the statement that we're talking about.
If you don't speak your native language, you're not native.
I think that I understand, you know, people's feelings when they say things like that, but I think it's more of a statement of you know, disconnection to say something like that. It's almost a very hurtful kind of a thing, and it's also building in a meme of discouragement. You know, it's just saying, like, if you don't speak your language, then you're not part of us. It's trying to exclude people, and I think people need to be included, including that the two call-in people. They both seem to have an inclusive mindset, you know, that we don't be judgmental about people that can't talk. And there's people I know in our own community that think it isn't important. Well, that's their view, but it isn't the view of the entire community. It's important, and we have to show it's important by using it as much as possible and using it all the time. If that is not the way it is, then we have to work towards making it that way. I love hearing my grandkids say words back to me in phrases. They understand. They can't explain things to me, and that's good. That's the purpose of babies, is that they accept and they'll repeat what you do, and they can't explain yet. It's not until we get older that we try to explain everything, and sometimes we miss the boat by a lot.
And so Jerry, I also wanted to ask you, Jerry. Yeah, definitely. We want people to be encouraged. Jerry, what about also owning some of that before, you know, you throw out something like that phrase, if you don't speak your language, you're not native. What about kind of like our caller putting the onus on yourself, thinking, I never taught you that language? What about carrying that, Jerry?
Well, I think that you can only share what you know. And if you don't know, you can't share it. And, you know, I've had that, you know, like thinking about my grandma. I used to be, when I was an activist, I was down on Christians. And my grandma's a Christian, and she could talk Indian, and I couldn't. And, you know, I had to face the fact of who's the Indian, me or her. So I think that, you know, using these distracting definitions and characterizations is really misleading and harmful, and it really taken you away from, you know, the things both your callers said, is to be encouraging. And if they don't know, they may not feel the importance. And that's kind of like up to us to show the importance by the way we behave, the way we treat them. You know, it's a matter of respect.
I agree. Thank you for that, Jerry. And again, we are going to continue with this conversation. Let's go ahead and bring in another caller. We have Lenny on the line. Online, looks like he's coming to us from the Crow Reservation. Lenny, welcome to the hour.
Good morning. I just wanted to address just a few factors. One of them, I think a lot of people need to identify on reservations and finding connection as well as belonging, is user-friendly teaching methods that would support and encourage a lot of learners, because they're starting at ground zero. Sometimes we get in these educators who are experts that lack maybe some teaching methods, and they acquired teaching methods from parochial schools or border schools where they were really subjected to harsh treatment, and they think that, that's the method of teaching, and they don't realize that there are other methods like immersion as well as Montessori that will help people learn languages. Also, another one is that a lot of our people are suffering from historic trauma, And one of the listeners earlier commented on that we need to take also a healing approach to help these people, because to some extent they've been handicapped within their own culture, and they're also treated biasly by some people saying that they're not Indian, or they're not, you know, they're not Lakota, or they're not Cree, because of these people and their arrogance that they adapted from Western mainstream standards. So we really need to take a healing approach to have encourage facilitating and learning at ground zero, as well as developing plans. So those are my comments. It would be really interesting for the show to talk about teaching techniques, particularly the immersion techniques, Montessori, or the methods that call for interactive learning.
All right, Lenny, thank you for your call there on the Crow Reservation. And you can also add your ideas to our conversation today. What are some of the tools that your community has used to bring about more native speakers? What about learning the language in a positive way? Give us your suggestions, too. How do we turn things around when something negative is attached to learning our language? And with us on the line today, we have Jerry Hill. He is a speaker of his language, and he is also he's the president of the board of directors for the Indigenous Language Institute. Maybe you have worked with him in the past about keeping our native language strong. Call in and share your thoughts on how we make sure that more people are speaking our language, that they feel confident about it, and that, you know, they keep it alive. Is that important to you? We're also going to check in with the Chickasaw Nation and hear from a gentleman there who has picked up the language, and he's also encouraging other people to speak too. And if we have any more folks out there who are helping your community pick up their language, and if you just want to call in and give some words of encouragement in your language, in the hopes more people will be inspired to speak this language, you can call in and share those words too. As Jerry said, you know, he enjoys hearing these languages. So do we. And we really appreciate folks who are willing to share that bit of their culture with us on our Talking Circle. Today is an encore presentation of our electronic Talking Circle. Phone lines are closed, but we still want to hear from you. Send an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Whether it's politics, science, Native culture, or entertainment, the news stories that impact and affect Native communities are what you'll hear right here on Native America Calling. Join us as we bring you the nation's first and only electronic talking circle, Native America Calling, live on Native Voice One, the Native American radio service.
Na na na. I'm Nathan. My job gave me a lot. It gave me an income to support my family. It gave me purpose and pride. But the secondhand smoke there triggered my severe asthma attacks, infections, and lung damage. And I never smoked. It was so bad that my doctor told me I shouldn't work there anymore. I had to quit my job. But the damage was done. Now I'm so sick, I can't do much of anything I used to love to do. I don't referee youth basketball anymore. I don't run or lift weights. It's too much for my body to take. Instead, I'm taking breathing treatments or oxygen. I guess you could say my job gave me a lot. So let me give you a tip. Don't let people tell you that working around secondhand smoke is safe.
Smoking affects more than just your health. If you or someone you know wants free help to quit smoking, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Today, phone lines are closed for our encore presentation of Native America Calling. Send us a tweet instead to 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Shirhuipu'u. Maybe you know it as Isleta Pueblo. And thank you for joining us today. Every day, we cover topics that are important and relevant to our Native nations. And if you have a suggestion for a show topic, send us an email. Our address is comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Our focus today is speaking our Native languages. When I walk into a large room in my community, I've been taught to greet everyone properly. In the afternoon, I'd enter and say, Hinukakim Herimba. And I know that we all come from many different backgrounds. Some of us grew up speaking our language, and some of us may have heard it in the home, but don't speak fluently. And there are some who don't speak it at all. We're not judging, but we want to hear what it means when you can't speak your language and you make the journey to pick it up. A lot of people who don't speak their language are put under a lot of pressure and sometimes judgment. Some may even feel guilty and like their identity is being challenged. And does this kind of pressure make people want to learn? We want to hear what you think about that, or does it push them away? Let's go ahead and take a caller. We have Mary in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Mary, what would you like to add?
Yes, I have a question, I guess, for Jerry. On our reservation, we have many non-Native, non-members who speak fluently. Are they considered Native?
Ah, good question. Let's go ahead and welcome Jerry back to the hour with us today. We have him on the line. Jerry Hill comes to us from the Oneida Nation. He's on the Oneida Nation right now, too. He is also the president of the board of directors for the Indigenous Language Institute. Welcome back, Jerry. And Mary, wanted to know, you know, non-Native speakers sometimes speak the language. Does that make them Native?
No, I don't think speaking the language makes you Native. I think it makes you be able to communicate with Native people. And, you know, that's an interesting question. Around here, there's always been Native people that are non-Native people that could speak the language. And it makes them able to communicate, but it doesn't necessarily make them part of the culture. So there's a distinction between language and culture, although, you know, we put them together. The culture of, you know, communication has to do with commerce. It has to do with all kinds of things. And I think that, you know, somebody who does speak the language is likely to be more sensitive to the culture that they're in. And, you know, a friend of mine in Choctaw, Mississippi, told me once that we're all immersed. You know, unfortunately, we're immersed in English. And I think that, you know, just a non-Native person being able to speak the language shows that anybody can speak the language. And my teacher always told me that he didn't care who spoke it. He just cared that they spoke it right, you know, correctly, that they were able to communicate in the language. So I think that speaking the language doesn't make you, you know, culturally a Native. I think it makes you potentially sensitive. But, you know, I think that that's, you know, a historical fact that there's always been people that can translate other people's languages because they know two or more languages.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Here's something else that maybe some of you have your eye on, the Navajo elections. When it comes to speaking your language, you know, what does it mean when you do? Also, what does it mean when you don't? It is something that has been put on the table that has kept a candidate from running. And if this is something you've been watching or talking about, go ahead, call in, share your thoughts. What do you think about native language holding people back from even holding office? Let's go ahead and hear from Lillian now. She is in Pine Ridge, and she is connecting to us through Keeley Radio. Welcome, Lillian.
Good morning. Good morning to all of you, to everybody that's listening. This is an interesting topic. I have four granddaughters, and I'm teaching them at home to speak Lakota. And the younger kids, when I see them, it's not their fault they're not speaking their language. I'm 69. When I started school, I had to speak English, no Lakota. But I don't punish this generation about it. I'm willing to teach, let them learn, because it's just like going to school. Translation, translators, that's what we need with our younger children. And it's hard when you sit there and speak Lakota, you'll be sitting there, big eyes, trying to think what you're saying. What I do is I turn around and I explain it to them. That's what we need to do.
Lillian, they are very, very blessed to have you teaching them, and it sounds with a lot of patience, too. We appreciate your call, Lillian. They're in Pine Ridge, and if there are people who are also passing on the language, you know, what are some of the things that you make sure you do when you are teaching others to speak? What about the little ones? Is there a different approach you take? And what do you do to make sure that it is a positive experience? Let's go now to Ada, Oklahoma. On the line with us is Josh Hinson, and he's the director of the Chickasaw Language Revitalization Program, and he is Chickasaw. Welcome to the hour, Josh.
Joshua Hinson, my name's Josh Hinson, and in the Chickasaw, they call me Lokosh, it means gourd. And I'm happy to be here, and it's good that I can be speaking to everybody today, listening to the program. This is a fascinating topic, and any opportunity we have to talk about language is a good opportunity to take. So I appreciate you allowing me to talk today.
Right, Josh. It is our pleasure to have you with us in the hour. I'm enjoying what we're hearing here today from our different Native nations about speaking this language. Josh, we're also hearing there are often hurdles to get over, and you're teaching the language or helping others pick it up. When you hear that any negativity is attached to it, how does that make you feel?
I just think that what's encouraging is all the folks calling in today, and of course what Jerry's had to say is there's a lot of positive things. There's a lot of inclusivity that we're talking about here. You know, language, our languages should not be divisive, but rather they should be unifying. I think of who we are as a people. At the core of each of us as Native nations is this language. So it doesn't matter if you're reservation-based, if you live in the city, if you live in a town or you're rural, where you come from, even what you look like as an Indian person, the language, once you get it, once you start getting it, it can tie us all together. Indian people from so many diverse backgrounds can be brought together to the heart of language, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
All right, thanks for that, Josh. I got callers who also want to share in the conversation with us. Let's go now to Sheldon in Chinle, Arizona, tuned in on KUYI. Sheldon, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I'm from the Navajo Nation. Sheldon, I'm Silent Walker from the Navajo Reservation. I'm Water Flows Together, and I'm born for Bitterwater Clan. I myself really do believe in speaking your language. I think it's very important for the young ones to speak it. but also it is very important also to speak English very well. That is a dominant language that we all need to come to respect, because without it, we can't progress. And to me, progression is a little bit more important than anything else. Like recently, we've been dealing with this whole Navajo Nation election, and frankly, it's really embarrassing what's happening. I mean, we should be past this point by now and have progressed on beyond what we're dealing with right now.
Sheldon, I wanted to ask you a question since you did mention what's going on with the Navajo election. You know, just with all the hype that's been put, you know, with what Chris Desjini can speak or not speak, do you think that this is going to make more people pick up the language and make sure that they're speaking? Or is it going to, you know, put a negative thing on it and turn people away?
Personally, right now, I believe that it's kind of having a negative effect on the whole nation. I mean, there's no unity whatsoever. I mean, it was really sad for me today. I went to the voting polls, and, you know, I'll admit, I had already voted before. And I personally, I was really saddened because my vote didn't count. And, you know, they just did away with thousands of votes. And people that probably live in very rural areas that can't even come back down to vote again, they're thinking their vote counted and it was done away with. And it's just very, very saddening today because I saw government overpower the people.
All right, Sheldon. And I know there is a lot involved with the current elections. And today, you know, we do have space if you want to join us to talk about the side of the language and that being used to decide who can be a candidate. Sheldon, thank you for sharing. Again, you can also send us tweets, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and hear now from Audrey in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Audrey, what would you like to add?
Well, growing up, I was learning my language at one point in time, and my dad, he's the one who raised me. I love him a lot, and then I understand where he's coming from, that he was worried about my English, and right now, he took me out of, not right now, but when I was in kindergarten, he took me out of Hebrew class, and ever since then, I was just studying as hard as I can because I wanted to make him as proud as I can in school. Now I'm 25, and I'm trying to get back to learning my language, and it's a lot harder, but it's kind of a surprise because here in Alaska, the Yupik language is heavy, and it surprises a lot of people that I don't speak Yupik.
Audrey, thank you for your call there in Bethel, Alaska. Joshua, I want to hear your thoughts on this. Sometimes parents make a decision that they aren't going to be, you know, heavy on the language because they want to make sure that they don't damage, you know, their kids' opportunity to speak English. Is there anything you'd like to say when that's the case or advice for parents who are, you know, trying to make that decision? What's best for my child?
I just, I think about our own language situation here at home in Chickasaw Nation. You know, there was a time where our parents and grandparents and sometimes even great-grandparents, you know, they saw the world that they were bringing us into, and they said, my child needs to know this English language in order to be successful, to be competitive, to make a place for themselves in this modern world. And in some cases, they remembered the suffering that they went through because of their own native languages. And it wasn't out of shame or fear or whatever negative emotion. It was out of love that they put those languages away so that we could have a positive place in the world. But now it's different. And I think many of our older folks that had the language, maybe there's some regret that they didn't teach their kids. But now they're with us. They're with us every day. And they're making so many strides to make sure that every Chickasaw, no matter where they live throughout the world, has access. You know, they can hear their language and they can learn to say something in Chickasaw, something that's personally meaningful to them. So I'm so grateful that they didn't give up their languages, and I understand why they weren't able to pass them on to us. But there's no judgment on our part as younger people learning. We're just so blessed and grateful that we still have native speakers who are willing to share what they know with us. It's a beautiful thing still to have speakers in our community after centuries of contact. It's a good thing to have.
Thanks, Josh. All right, let's hear now from another caller coming to us today from the phone lines. We have, looks like, Lorna in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Lorna, are you there?
Yes. According to linguistic theory, babies, when they're infants, they babble and babble and babble, and their babbling starts out including all the sounds that human vocal cords can make. But over time, the sounds they never hear back to them get eliminated from this babbling library of sounds. And so that if they have Navajo, for instance, family, but they never, that no one in the family speaks Navajo to them when they're in that babbling phase, then they have as much trouble learning Navajo as someone who did hear Navajo as somebody who's not Navajo. But if they heard the sounds that are unique to Navajo language during the babbling phase, they kept those sounds in their sound library, and that makes it easier for them to learn the language that includes those unique sounds.
That's interesting, Lorna. Thank you for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Joshua, you know, when we start applying science to it and hearing, you know, what people think when they're analyzing this, and then we hear, you know, those sounds that our babies are hearing when in the babbling stage, as Lorna said, does that excite you that even being around the language as a baby might mean you can speak it better down the road?
I think this is something that, I mean, I've seen in my own experience, adult learners who come back to the language, even, you know, folks in their 50s and 60s who were basically native speakers as kids but who lost it when they went to school. What the caller was saying is absolutely true. They still have this language in their mind, and having grown up with it and hearing it from parents and grandparents, in many cases it is easier for them to achieve more native-like pronunciation. So that's to their benefit. That's not to say that you can't become a proficient speaker, you know, if you haven't heard these things. You know, from my perspective in our program, we really want people to capture worldview and to be able to communicate in Chickasaw. So we're going for real daily communication, not linguistic perfection or kind of perfect diction or pronunciation. Those of us who didn't come up with the language in our ears, we're always going to speak it a little differently because English, for example, is our first language. But that doesn't mean we can't communicate. And the speakers are very supportive of that. They know we don't sound just like them, but they just want us to say something. They just want us to talk, and so that's a good thing.
All right. Those sound like good goals to set. Let's go ahead and hear from another caller. We have Maddie in Rosebud, South Dakota. She is joining us today. Hello, Maddie. What would you like to share?
Hello. I was moved to tears as I was listening to this conversation. You know, nowadays, most of people speak English. And then, so then there are English speakers and there are native speakers. And I believe that both should work together. Both should work together. I've been to different prisons, and I've advocate for our peoples in the prisons. And there are many people that are locked up, also the juvenile systems, you know, that away from home, and many of them can't even speak the languages. And it's like, you know, out of respect, you know, it's like when you see a black person, you know, with, you know that they're black, you know, they're all together, they're one people, and white people, and so it's like natives, you know, whether we speak English or not, you know, we're all the same.
And Maddie, that does take us, you know, back to identity. Something else I want to pick up on that you mentioned. What about when we are displaced or, you know, our lives bring us to a different place where there are no speakers? Josh, can you help us with that one? You know, what about when that's the challenge? There's nobody around, or as Maddie was sharing, you know, people who might be in the system.
I think there are many examples of, you know, kind of relative tribes in Indian country, you know, where they don't have any native speakers, or they're on the sort of on the edge of losing their last ones. I think of the Mashpee Wampanoag, Jessie Little Dobaird, who brought her language back. It hadn't been spoken since the 1860s. I think of Darrell Baldwin from the Miamia. You know, their language hadn't been spoken since the 1960s. And, of course, good friends north of us in the Sac and Fox Nation, they only have a handful of native speakers left, and their youngest are in their 80s. So nothing is impossible. I mean, you talk about negative emotion, that's sort of the terror of imagining, you know, when I was a younger person in my 20s, I thought in 30 or 40 years, there'll be no native speakers left of Chickasaw because the youngest, of course, were in their 60s. But I see what we're doing now, and I see what other tribes have accomplished with no native speakers, and I just don't have to be afraid anymore. We do everything we can every day to get as good as we can get, and we document and document and document. But there's always a way. Even if you haven't had a native speaker in 100 years, if there's just a little documentation, or you can borrow from the language of a related tribe, if you care for your language, you can bring it back. And that's not just my opinion. I mean, it's factual. Go ask the Mashpee Wampanoag. Go ask the Miamia. Go ask the Sac and Fox what they're doing with their language. Go ask the Yuchis. They only have a handful of speakers left, too, but they're not quitting. They're continuing. And we're doing the same. We have somewhere south of 60 speakers left. The youngest was born in 1949, but a good majority of those people are helping us keep our language going.
There is a lot of good work going on, and if you'd like to tell us more about it, please do send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Let's take in another caller. We have Navasia on the line in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Welcome to the hour, Navasia.
Hello. Greetings to everyone. I wish you health, happiness, and a good life. I want to present a whole different perspective on language. There's a behavioral health problem called dyslexia, which is a problem that anybody can have. It's an old Greek word, the prefix of which the first part of the word, dys, means lack of or being without or inadequate. The second part of the word, lexia, comes from an old word meaning word or verbal language, also from the Oxford Dictionary. It says, a difficulty in reading due to affection, meaning influence, of the brain. And so I'm wondering how relevant and how widespread dyslexia is in the Native American community.
And Navasia, are you also concerned if dyslexia keeps you from learning your language?
Well, I'll tell you how I've learned English. I've learned not by studying English classes in school. I've learned everything by copying. I copy everybody. I try to copy what I think is correct language when somebody else speaks. So that's how I've learned, by copying.
Okay. Navasia, hold tight. I want to get Joshua's take on this. Go ahead, Joshua.
I mean, obviously, most indigenous language here in the Americas were not written down. Many are still not written down. So, I mean, if you have a almost wholly oral language, I don't know that dyslexia would play a part in acquisition, you know, in getting that language. If you really focus, like if you have some deficiency in reading, don't worry about reading materials. Just get some audio and listen to it, get what you can get out of it, or sit down with a speaker and just talk. There are many ways around any particular disability that individuals might have when they want to, you know, get their native language. That's our jobs to help them out. So I wouldn't be concerned if someone had dyslexia. We can still talk Chickasaw together.
All right. Jerry, I want to get your take on that, too. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah. I think that what Joshua was saying is really correct.
you know, looking at the natural acquisition of language, it happens as an oral basis, and it really doesn't have anything to do with reading. Reading in any culture comes long after a person is fluent in their language. So I think that, you know, the idea of the influence of language and reading is somewhat of a distraction in the discussion that we're having. And, you know, I recall, you know, one of my daughters asking me, and I, you know, I've been through law school and I do all this stuff, and she asked me if I was dyslexic. And, you know, from her perspective, it was partly a joke, but I was thinking, well, I could be, I don't know. How would I know? I never let the label, you know, if there was a label that could define me, stop me from what I wanted to do. So I thought that, you know, having more of a positive attitude about what you want rather than trying to analyze why you can't will get you further. So I think that, you know, what the gentleman raised is an interesting topic for discussion, but I don't think that it it doesn't influence me in terms of trying to teach language or trying to help others learn their language. I think that, you know, people that have been limited in a lot of ways are still able to speak. They don't speak the same way or with the same facility or with
but
the same knowledge.
But the important thing is that
speak.
They are speaking. And Gerald, I had cut in. We are at the end of the hour and just a couple of moments before we're off air. I appreciate you, Gerald Hill and Joshua Hinson, for joining us and speaking about the language. Also, all to the callers who also shared their opinions on this. We appreciate your call. And we're going to do this again tomorrow. Open up our phone lines and invite you in. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
Waka, medicated at a look in Mikilmutsumut suited at a look, a killing or McQuatic, a killing nailing or McGayu my mountain, spit ignatin so. Mutsut Muluten, Kutsiksut Muluten, Ilifsut Muluten Dort, Baksuki, Yumsaristici, Watsuka, Baksukuna. InsureKidsNow.gov, Watsuka, Kanksut Lukuna number 1-877-KIDS-NOW.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.